It's time! Hey, Dave, listen up, please!
Scotty, that's a great question. I got a question for you, though, Scotty. You know that there's other players on our team besides Desi.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know. Something amazing.
Jones for three. And he banks it in.
Bailey. Up and in and a chance for three.
It's the worst home loss that I can ever remember of being a part of. We had two starters go 1-for-21. And that's without, Justin Smith, who arguably is one of our most valuable players. We didn't score. We didn't rebound. We didn't defend. That about sums it up.
Welcome in to the basketball podcast of Mid-America. I am Seth Campbell, joined by Scotty Bordelon, and I think it's more thankfully that we are not joined by Eric Musselman after that game against Missouri. Arkansas not playing well at all in the home loss to Missouri. Not a pretty game, Scotty, but we'll get into that. We've also got a little halfway look at the season. So we're about halfway through the season, thereabouts. We hit the new year. So we're going to kind of look back at what we thought would happen before the season. And now that we're in the middle of the season, we're going to kind of reflect on some of Scotty and I's awards that we gave out in the middle of the season. But man,
I don't know that that's a great idea for me. I don't think we need to revisit mine.
Hey, this is a good reflection. So that way, moving forward, Scotty, at the end of the year,
we're gonna repick and then pick those awards for the rest of the way too.
So we could say, yeah, for something that was in the middle, something that's in, or the beginning, the middle, and the end. Either way, I'm just happy to be back with you. We're on a little bit of a hiatus there over the holiday season. Basketball didn't take a big break, but we were in and out of the office, so we took the break. But we are back now, and we'll be giving you all kinds of basketball action through the end of the season, depending on who you are looking at. The Razorbacks are definitely in the NCAA tournament. I think Jerry Palm said that they're going to be in the first four in, which is kind of surprising with a net and NET ranking that is at 24. So all of that, we got a lot to dive into here on the basketball podcast of Mid-America. But let's first start Arkansas-Missouri basketball. Not a great game for the Hogs, Scotty.
Buddy, it was bad. It was real bad. Like, it literally felt like there was a lid on the rim for basically the entire day. And I mentioned to Eric Musselman after the game, I wanted to know what kind of contributed to Arkansas finishing what I thought at the time was 8-for-30 on layups. And he's got his head down. Like, you can't see his face in the Zoom screen. Like, when I start asking the question, you can't see his face. And so I'm like, oh boy. And he lifts his head up and he said, that's about 5 more than I thought we were. And turns out he was spot on. They were 3 out of 23 on layups. Yeah. And so through 2 SEC games, that puts them at 6-for-30. Dude, like, you're not going to win SEC games shooting not converting layups at least a decent clip. And I realized that Justin Smith wasn't there, but Justin Smith hasn't been the greatest finisher at the rim either. Like, I did shot charts for December. He was 26 of 52 at the rim. Like, that's 50%. But at the same time, if Arkansas makes 50% of its layups or thereabouts against Missouri, like, Arkansas probably wins the game. I mean, I don't get it. I think Vanover was 0-for-5. Moody was 0-for-4. Desi was 1-for-3. Note was 1-for-7. Like, you got to get better production from that, especially on those close in looks. But Mus has told the guys, he said he's got to lay out the blueprint and he wants them to kind of take a more old school approach in terms of finishing at the rim, cut out the Euro steps, cut out the spin moves. And, when you're in the lane and you're maybe a Desi Sills and there are three much taller guys around you with their arms up, maybe you kick it out instead of, throwing up a contested 5-footer. It's some of the best times to let go of a perimeter three is when you suck the defense in. You got three guys in a restricted area. Kick it out, swing the ball around. Like, Arkansas's got the third best offensive efficiency rating in the SEC right now, and they're not making layups. Like, you make your layups, and maybe it's a combination of make the layups that you have, but when you don't have them, when you're in that close, kick it out for a three. I mean, Arkansas's offensive efficiency rating could still rise. I mean, just by making layups and, you know, not taking ill-advised shots and being a little more selfless with the ball.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, Scotty. Not that it matters, but I think that, you know, the rims at Bud Walton, or maybe it's just when Arkansas plays Missouri, the women's team played Missouri the next day on Sunday, and they were not shooting well from layups either. Now, they started shooting better, and they ended up shooting 10 of 21, which is about 50%. But on layups, you really want to shoot more than 50% from the field. But something's happening.
I was about to say, it's probably like facing a Quanzo Martin team. Like, his teams defensively are always pretty tough. But still, at the same time, they only blocked one shot on Saturday. Blocked one shot, and the blocked shot came from a 6'3 guard.
Yeah.
And so it's not like Jeremiah Tillman was swatting everything away.
I think this stat goes to Hog Stats that he tweeted out afterwards, but Arkansas has never scored 70 points against the Quanzo Martin team. 70 or maybe 80.
Yeah, his teams are tough. I think it's 80. But yeah, his teams are always tough. I mean, they embody him.
But that's okay, because if you look at it, if you look at the final score, 81-68, Missouri gets above 80, but really a lot of those are kind of towards the end points. You held Missouri for a majority of the game to where if you make shots, then you would definitely be winning the game.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't a defensive issue for most of the game. But at the same time, we could say the same thing about Arkansas scoring most of their points toward the end. Like, they went on a little flurry, you know, after Musselman got tossed out. And Arkansas had its second worst offensive efficiency rating of Musselman's tenure. And without that flurry, it probably would have been the worst. Like, the Georgia Tech game on the road last year was number one. Like, that was as bad as it got. Whew. As bad as it's been under Musselman, but they somehow got out of there with a win. But yeah, I mean, it was clear, like, worst shooting performance in Bud Walton arena. I don't think, like, we're not going to see that again, but you got to find a way to manufacture points in a game like that. And I don't know what it's like. Maybe instead of going up for some of those layups, maybe you shot fake, get defenders off their feet, get to the free throw line, like, get points the easy way. But at the same time, you still got to make your easy layups. I mean, it was a strange day, like, all the way around.
I think you're exactly right. Arkansas, just going back to the defense for just a second, as we said, they played good on defense. They held Missouri to 5 of 19 from the three-point line, which was their MO last year. And Musselman had been stressing that recently, that they weren't playing good defense. You know, talking about that they need to go back to the brick drills and all that stuff. And I really believe that Missouri hit two of those three-pointers towards the end of the game. So you were holding Missouri well under average from the three-point line. You just couldn't translate that on offense. And so it definitely was the offense part of it. And, you know, that goes into multiple things. You are right. Arkansas missing Justin Smith, that is going to be huge. He was a starter, and you can't just replace that in 2 days leading up to practice. But at the same time, this team is supposed to be different from last year's team, and the fact of that you can have 9 to 10 guys that were supposed to be able to step up and play. I get it, on a short notice, maybe you can't make the game plan as well as you would like you to with Justin Smith out. But now, moving forward to Tennessee, Musselman said, you know, he probably doesn't think that it's going to be fixed by Tennessee, but maybe even after Tennessee. You've had a week now. You've got to move on and figure out how you're going to win games without Justin Smith.
Yeah. And going back to your point about Missouri not hitting threes, I think Arkansas got a little fortunate that, you know, Xavier Pinson was really good playing the pick and roll against Arkansas, and he did a pretty good job of, you know, penetrating and kicking to some of his teammates that were open in the corners, and Missouri just didn't knock those down. So Arkansas, I think, got a little bit fortunate there. But you're right, like, Arkansas does have to move on. Like Musk said after the game the other day, that, or maybe it was yesterday, that Arkansas's players just can't worry about Justin Smith. Like, they've just got to believe that Justin is going to do his rehab and get back as soon as he can. But, you know, life's kind of got a, not to get sentimental, but life's kind of got a way of making you move on. Like, the games aren't going to stop happening. Like, they're not going to stop playing games just because Justin Smith went down. And so you got to find solutions. And right now, I don't know that you've got a solution that you feel great about. Like, your options to replace Justin are, you go four guards, which if I was going to go with four guards, you know, I was looking at Hooplins the other day. Arkansas's got a lineup of Desi, Jalen Tate, JD Notte, Moses Moody, and Connor Vanover that's been pretty good in SEC play. Like, they're scoring at very, very limited possessions. I think it's something somewhere around 25 possessions, but they're scoring like 1.2 points per possession, really good. Defensively, it's been pretty good because I think you've got three of your scrappier defensive guards on the floor. And then JD, believe it or not, he's like top five in the SEC right now. I know it's only through two games, but he's top five in the SEC in steal rate, which is crazy. I know a lot of that came from the Auburn game when he had four, but I like those. I like that four guard group. And then Connor is, you know, if you get him going from three again, that's a deadly lineup. And then obviously it gives you great rim protection. But the other options are Ethan Henderson, who I don't know that you feel comfortable about depending on for lengths of like any extended period of time, but he played well against Fulkerson last year and Bud Walton. So maybe that's a well they go to. Do you give Vance another shot? Like, I did my shot charts the other day. He was 0-12 from three on the left side of the floor. That's not great, but he was 4-5 on the right wing. So maybe you place him on the floor. I mean, you put him in spots on the floor where he's best at. But at the same time, he can be a little bit of a liability defensively. He's not the toughest dude at 6'9", 225. But I think we knew that a little bit. Maybe he's got to get a little bit tougher. And then Jalen Williams, you know, I like Jalen, what he gave Arkansas against Missouri. Like, he was – his first couple minutes, he had, like, a defensive rebound, a block, and a steal. But he's got a little bit of ways to go, like, in terms of defending the pick and roll, knowing where to be. All the time, and you know, his perimeter jumper's not falling at a great clip, but I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I think if I was running the team, and I'm really not, really not, and I'm not trying to say that this is what Arkansas needs to do, but I would try that four guard lineup that I mentioned earlier with Connor, and just, you know, try to maybe you spell guys. I think you got to get Devo in because he's giving you great energy.
I agree.
And I think Ethan could play a role. Like, you got to get some length in there to bother Fulkerson and maybe Eve Pons a little bit. And I think Vance, for a little while, he was playing with pretty good confidence. Like, he seemed more sure of himself than he had since the season opener. I don't know what the solution is, but I think they're gonna give it a shot. And, you know, if they find a lineup that's working well with them, you might see some lineups like last year where several guys are playing 30 plus minutes, like three or four guys.
And that's okay. I mean, when you look at the lineup, you're going to have to do something a little different. And I like the four guard lineup. JD Notte, when he runs the point, I feel like the ball can get stagnant. But when Jalen Tate is in there running the point and JD can be a shooter, and then you spot up Moses Moody on there as well, I think that allows Arkansas to be dynamic. And I want to go to Connor Vanover here for a second. He's just had a rough few games. He can't hit from the three-point line, and that is his MO. He's a three-point shooter. That's what he does, and he can do it well. But the problem is he just hasn't here recently. And I think that you made a really good point to me, Scotty, is that he's not just a three-point shooter. He's not necessarily a bang it in the low post and dunk it kind of guy. So why are we, as Arkansas, I guess, in a way, why is can't Connor Vanover shots really only coming at the rim on putbacks or maybe short layups or at the three-point line? He can shoot the mid-range.
He was 3 of 6 on mid-range shots last month.
I think that's right in his game too. You know, he probably can post somebody up. He won't be able to, you know, blow by them or anything, but the fadeaway right there, you want to try and get a hand in the face of a guy fading away from you at 7'3"?
That's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that Connor might find a sweet spot in there as well. But I think that utilizing him in a different way to get his confidence up will be good.
Yeah, I think so. And he doesn't just, I don't know what I'm really trying to say, but he doesn't have to just shoot through. Like when he catches on the perimeter and he's open, are you wanting him to not shoot? Like, do you want him to pass up an open three? Probably not, because odds are, like, the rubber band effect's about to come at some point, right? Like, he was 2 of 10 from the left wing last month, 3 of 11 from the right wing, and he struggled, you know, he struggled mightily against Missouri. But you got to think at some point, like, he starts hitting some of those, and then nobody's going to question, you know, whether he should be on the floor or even attempting some of those shots. But yeah, like I think he's a smart enough guy that if his 3-point shot continues to not fall and he does stay on the floor, because they really need him for rim protections. They don't have anybody now that can really protect the rim when he's not on the floor. I think he's smart enough to just like move around. Like the short corners can be his friends, like elbow extended, free throw line extended. He's hit multiple jump shots from there this year. So he doesn't have to just be a 3-point threat and a, you know, a guy that gets fouled when he goes up for a dunk on offense. Like he can play a little bit. He can kind of wander. I think I would probably, I might put him in pick and roll. And when he's not in pick and roll, I might put him in the dunker spot. It's like if JD Notae gets off the bounce, or Moses Moody, Jalen Tate beat their defender off the bounce, draw a defender in, Connor's right there in the short corner. That's money. Like he's really good in that 12 to 15 foot range.
The dunker spot is what Jimmy Witt played last year, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's exactly what could be perfect for him. Scotty, going into, as we switch gears here a little bit to preview Arkansas versus Tennessee, looking at Arkansas's two games, they lost the game in Knoxville and beat Tennessee at home last year. And you mentioned Ethan Henderson, so I wanted to go look up his stat line against Tennessee last year. He played 30 minutes, was 1 for 2 from the field, but had 9 rebounds, 4 offensive rebounds, which last year for Arkansas, 4 offensive rebounds was like manna from heaven.
Yeah.
He had 3 fouls and only the 2 points, but he was mainly matched up on Fulkerson and limited Fulkerson to 15 points. Fulkerson only got 5 rebounds that game, and he was 5 of 12 from the field. So I think that what Ethan did, and I mean, just to remember what Arkansas had last year, Mason Jones went for 37 that game, and Isaiah Joe went for 22.
That always helps.
Yeah, I mean, that helps when you win 86 to 69. Sure, having a guy come up 3 points short of 40 and then having another guy score over 20. But needless to say, like, Ethan Henderson did a good job. And that might be something that Musselman looks back on last year and can say, all right, we will use Ethan in maybe just the Tennessee game because he matches up better here. But that's just a food for thought. I had completely forgotten about Henderson's game against Tennessee last year until you mentioned.
Yeah, I would have to go back and look at Fulkerson's numbers, but I'm pretty sure that game against Arkansas and Bud Walton, when Ethan played so well, I think that was the first game in a while that Fulkerson had shot less than 50% from the floor. And yeah, he was, I mean, a few games before he played Arkansas, he was 8 out of 12, 4 out of 8, 2 out of 6. And then he went 5 of 12 against Arkansas. Then the next 3 games, he goes 9 for 14, 10 out of 15, 5 out of 10. So Ethan did something right in that game. I think his length can really be a plus. I know, like, Fulkerson's probably a better player this year than he was last year, but I wouldn't be surprised at all to see, you know, the coaching staff go to that Ethan Henderson well again. He was solid. You don't need him to score, like, needing a rebound, needing to grab offensive rebounds. And, you know, if he can grab an offensive rebound and he's got a chance to go back up with it, you just need him to be an opportunistic scorer. Like that's really about it. Ethan can give you some great minutes doing that, you know, if he's fully engaged.
I agree. All right, Scotty, before we get into our halfway season predictions and kind of look back on what we predicted at the beginning of the year, I want to talk to you a little bit about just the SEC in general. Just two games in, but we have seen the overall body of work from these SEC teams in non-conference. You know, Kentucky was a favorite. Tennessee was a favorite at the beginning of the year. Tennessee looks the part. Kentucky doesn't. Who are your top four teams in the SEC? And the top four is important because those are the four teams that get a bye in the SEC tournament, the double bye in the SEC tournament, and are one win away from the semifinals. So, and you look at the SEC right now as it stands, and you know, Kentucky could easily come back and have a great conference schedule and be in the top four. But who do you think are your top four teams in the SEC right now?
Yeah, right now I think it's at the top. I think it's still Tennessee. They are on KenPom. They've got the best defensive rating in the country. Like, it's been incredible what their defense is doing. Eve Pons is a monster. I watched a little bit, just a little bit of that Alabama-Tennessee game the other day, and I know Tennessee lost. I only watched for like 3 minutes, and Ave Pons had like three blocks. And some of the blocks were just only extraterrestrials make those kind of blocks. And he's on a different.
Well, you know, he's from France.
Defensively. Yeah.
No telling what's happening over there.
Yeah. He's really good. And I like Santiago Viscovi a lot. You know, Arkansas staff said that he reminds them a little bit. He's got a little bit of Manu Ginobili in him. So he's big for them. Second in the league, I'm not real sure. I might give, as for right now, I'm still not completely sold on Alabama, but Alabama is a pretty good team. Like that group offensive rebounds like crazy, and that's going to give a lot of teams fits, and that's part of the reason LSU was so good last year, because they would just throw up a shot, miss it, go rebound it, putbacks, layups, tip dunks, all that.
Arkansas knows all about that after their game in Baton Rouge last year.
Yeah. And so I'd probably go with Tennessee at the top, and then maybe Florida second. I think if they get – I don't know that they're going to get Keontae Johnson back, but they've still got a pretty talented roster. LSU is really good. Have you watched Cam Thomas play?
I'm not.
If anybody thinks JD Notae is a gunner, you need to check out Cam Thomas. Like, this dude has never seen a shot that he doesn't like. He's taking 37% of the shots, of LSU shots, when he's on the floor.
Goodness.
True freshman. And then they've still got, on that roster, they've still got Trenton Watford, Darius Days, Javonte Smart. Like, that's a pretty loaded LSU team. I don't know if they defend well, but they've got some dudes that can really fill it up. And so I'd probably go Tennessee, Florida, LSU, and then maybe Alabama at this point. Missouri's pretty solid, I think, but you also saw some of the warts when they played at Tennessee, but that could just be Tennessee, you know, just squeezing the life out of somebody. Who else am I missing? Oh, Kentucky. I think they're going to get it figured out. Like, they just – it's kind of their MO, and they went to Starkville down – they were down 9 or 10 late second half. Cal gets tossed. Here they come, win in double overtime because they found some perimeter shooting. Like, Dante Allen, he like barely played it all this year until Saturday. And then he comes in and he lights it up. So I think, and he just, his, the presence of a perimeter shooter for Kentucky just opens up so many more things for them. And I think Dante Allen, he probably just changed Kentucky's season.
I think so too. Cal getting tossed. I mean, he even said in his postgame, I believe, that he got tossed against Arkansas last year and it kind of changed how the rest of their season went. And so he did it again against Mississippi State and it ended up working out. I don't see any way that Kentucky doesn't turn it around. They're just, as much as, you know, Arkansas fans want to hate them, which rightfully so, but they're still Kentucky. They still have the athletes. And just for whatever reason, I just don't see them missing the tournament under Calipari and being a non-factor in the SEC.
You know what the crazy thing was? Like, when Kentucky came back and won in double overtime, they didn't play BJ Boston at all. Really? Like, he was sitting on – I thought he had fouled out, but he was just – he was 4 of 13 from the floor, had two fouls, and they just decided not to run with him. Wow. Which is interesting that Kentucky can go on the road and win a game in double overtime, you know, without one of their more heralded players. And he probably hasn't had the greatest or most efficient season. That has to be a confidence boost. And then you finally find some perimeter shooting. That Cal's got to be pretty tickled with that.
Yeah, when you look down the list of the SEC standings right now, there's only two teams that are 2-0, and that's Florida and Alabama. And as you said, Florida without Keontae Johnson may not be the same Florida team, but they're still going to be pretty good. So at this juncture in the season, I would put Florida – I put Tennessee first. I would put Florida second. I would probably put that's tough. Probably not Kentucky. They haven't won enough. I'd probably put Kentucky like at fifth, and I'd put Missouri and Alabama up there. I mean, Alabama has the body of work right now where they've done everything that's been asked of them. They are 7-3 overall, and some of those losses looked kind of bad early, but the way that
they're all to the top 100 teams, though. You know, yeah, what I mean? One of them was Stanford. The other was Clemson. I didn't know Clemson was as good as they are. They're top 20 on KenPom, but yeah, lost to Western Kentucky and Charles Bassey by 2 points at home. Like, that's not great, but I mean, I think they're physical, they're tough, and I think they've got enough shooting to be a pretty solid team.
Yeah, Nate Oates, former Buffalo coach. It's been at Alabama now. This is his second year, isn't it?
I think so.
He's really turned the program around where it's not just a football season and non-football season. There might actually be a basketball season in Tuscaloosa. Well, Scotty, let's move on. Let's talk about our individual awards that we talked about at the beginning of the year. I'm going to run through the list of mine and yours, and we're going to give them a thumbs up or a thumbs down of how well they've done so far. So starting with mine, MVP Justin Smith, that could be possible. So I'll give that one a thumbs up. Most improved.
He could prove you right, like, in these next few weeks.
It's very true. I hope he doesn't.
Like, you know, without playing, he could prove that he's the most valuable guy on the roster.
It's very true. Most improved for me would be Jalen Williams. I still think that's possible, so I'll go thumbs up still.
That's a guy that's just going to get better with more run. Like, he just is, and he's
hit a three too.
Yeah, he's going to eventually find his touch from the perimeter too. He could be a matchup problem eventually.
Sixth man being Vanover, that has not worked out. He started almost every game. The shooter being JD Notte, that man's a shooter.
He is a shooter.
Sometimes they don't go in, but he is a shooter. The go-to being Moses Moody, I just don't think that Arkansas has really been in a situation where they've needed to rely on somebody to be a go-to.
So I think. I think he will be that guy. Like when they're playing a tight game.
That one's still up in the air. And then Mr. Reliable, Desi Sills. I mean, that was almost a given coming into the season. But he has been really good for Arkansas.
He's been very good. Like, he's been very reliable. I think, like, he put up his first real dud against Missouri. But My boy Desi won't stay down long.
Going to JD Notte, it was Scotty's MVP. Still very possible as well. Most improved, Connor Vanover. I think that's possible too. He's got potential to be there. You know, he put up a dud as well. Him and Desi both kind of put up.
Yeah, they were combined 1 of 21. That just 0 of 9 from three. Like, you can't have two starters do that. You just can't.
Sixth man is Jalen Tate. That hasn't worked out very well for you either.
Big thumbs down. Two thumbs down.
We're not very good at predicting the starting lineups, apparently. The shooter being Moses Moody. He's got a stroke.
Yeah. Last month, I did the shot charts for December a couple days ago. And Moses was, you know, I think he started the year 0 of 6 from the left wing. He hit 5 of 9 last month, and he's 5 of 8 in the corner. I love a guy that can fill it up from the corner. Like, that's a really good shot, really efficient shot. And Moses is – he's the only guy that made more than one last month. The only guy. He made 5 in the right corner, and he made 1 in the left.
He's the only guy to make more than one corner three in last month.
Yeah. Yep. And it also, you know, I don't think the shooter award doesn't have to just go to a guy that fills it up from deep. Like, his mid-range touch, oh my gosh, it's really nice. I think the next step for Moses, you know, we kind of saw him struggle to finish in his first couple of games of the season. And we're kind of seeing that a little bit to start SEC play. So he's going to have to make an adjustment. I think he's 2 of 12 on two-point looks through two SEC games. That's got to get better. You know, he's not going to miss all of his layups again, more than likely. But he was, you know, 19 of 25 at the rim last month. He bounced back really well. He's got to continue to do that. Like, he's too important of an offensive weapon to leave a bunch of points on the floor.
Then moving on, your go-to, you said JD Notte, but then you also put in there that it could be Moses Moody as well. And you even said Vance Jackson.
You didn't have to say that. you didn't have to say Vance.
Well, you know, you thought that beginning of the season, I mean, no, you didn't think at the beginning of the season, we knew, but we thought that Vegas, Vance, would get the opportunity to go to Vegas, and that would kind of put him on track. So that's where all the magic happens. You know, everybody says what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but Vance wants what happens in Vegas to come everywhere, but he didn't get to go to Vegas to start it off. So yeah. I think that's the problem.
I still feel good about Notte and Moody being the go-to guys. Like, I think Mus has already said multiple times that Moses is a go-to, which is crazy. He's played 11 college games or 10 college games. And JD's about – he's one of the – how many guys can we say can really create their own offense or offense for others on a consistent basis? Like, it's JD and Moses and Desi. Most of the time when Desi attacks, he's going full head of steam at the rim. I think we'll see the ball. Like, if Arkansas gets in close games, it's going to be JD and Moses, you know, kind of initiating, operating things.
And then your Mr. Reliable was Justin Smith, which he was Mr. Reliable while he was on the floor. You can kind of depend on him to grab close to 8-ish rebounds a game. You know, obviously he's had some double doubles. Just, he was the guy that you could depend on, kind of that around that 10-10 every single time he stepped out onto the court. He was going to get at least.
Yeah, and he averaged like, what, 10-5 or something like that in his last season in Indiana. Mm-hmm. I think I remember saying in the preseason that he was probably going to put up similar numbers, but they'll probably look a little bit more impressive. And, you know, he just provides so much toughness. And I think I mentioned to somebody the other day that Justin Smith is kind of the dad of the team. Like, he's steady. You never see him get too high or too low, but he's seen a lot of ball, played a lot of ball in a really good league. And so he's got tons of experience, and he's not, I don't want to say he's not afraid, but he's quick to go to a younger player and point out, hey, you got to maybe Jalen Williams, for example. Jalen gets called for a foul for, you know, maybe not remaining vertical when he's contesting a shot. Justin's going to walk over there with his arms raised, just like, hey, you got to stay vertical. And I remember there was one game, Arkansas was winning by like 20, 25 points. Moses got called for a reach-in foul when Arkansas just wants the clock to run. Moses gets called for a reach-in, and Justin huddles everybody up, and then you can read his lips, and he said, stop bleeping reaching in. And so he just, you know, he's kind of, like I said, he's kind of the dad of the team, I think. And he's still going to be around, but it's not the same with him, you know, being able to get everybody on the same page on the floor.
Yeah, he's valuable. Just the value that he brings while he was on the court goes beyond just the measurables. All right, Scotty, that's just about going to do it here for us on the Whole Hog. Oh, wait, no, I almost forgot. We got to project what we think will happen. Oh, my goodness, we recapped. But do you have any changes that you would like to make halfway through the season?
I want to take Vance out of the go-to guy possibility.
Yeah.
I want to take him out. Might have to run through the awards again.
So MVP, I'm going to stick with my stuff. So, and you can kind of come off of me. MVP, I'm going to stick with Justin Smith. Are you going to stick with JD Notte?
MVP, I'm going to switch to Moses, I think.
Okay. You're switching to Moses?
Moses, I mean, he's the only guy that's scored in double figures every game. I mean, he rebounds super well for his position, especially on the offensive glass. Arkansas is like turning his offensive rebounds into almost instant offense, which is super valuable. And it's not like he's gotten into SEC play and he's stopped offensive rebounding at a pretty good rate. Like he's, I mean, I think he's shown pretty good grit and toughness and got a pretty good basketball IQ that, you know, allows him to get in the positions to offensive rebound. So I think I like Moses a lot. I think he's going to improve as a defender too as the year goes on.
Most improved, I had Jalen Williams. I'm going to keep Jalen Williams. You had Connor Vanover.
I think I'm going to switch. I might switch to Devo.
Okay.
Devo.
That's a good pick.
Devo, I think coming into the year, I thought, you know, when I did my rotation projection that he would probably just get spot minutes. But he's made enough winning plays. His hustle and his determination has been there, and it's earned him – earned him a start. Like in his first SEC or second SEC game, he's starting, and in his first one he basically made all the winning plays to like help Arkansas pull away. I've been super impressed with him. He's got to finish better at the rim, but I love his, I mean, like a couple minutes into the game the other day, he's got like four or five deflections. He's hit the floor two or three times and knocked balls loose, and he can be a terror. I think I'm gonna go with him for most improved.
Okay. Moving on to sixth man. I have Vanover, so I'm going to scratch that out since Vanover's gotten a majority of the starts. When you look at Arkansas starting, not starting, I mean, JD Notae coming off the bench. If he comes off the bench, you almost got to give him the sixth man of the year award.
Yeah. I think also, go ahead.
But that's also kind of not fair because he is almost a starter coming off the bench in a way. So I'm going to go, for all the reasons that you just said, I'm going to go with Devo as a sixth man of the year, especially I'm not sure what will happen moving forward if JD will get the start and they'll bring Devo in off the bench, or if they'll go with the lineup they did with Missouri with Justin Smith being out 3 to 6 weeks. With all of that being said, I'm going to go Devo. And I may be wrong again. I may pick another guy that's going to start for the rest of the year, but I feel pretty safe in the fact of just from what we expected of Devo at the beginning of the year to what he's doing now, that he can fill in that sixth man award.
Yeah, I need to take my sixth man. I need to change it because my sixth man hasn't come off the bench once.
Yeah.
I'm going with JD. Just, I get what you're saying about Devo, but JD is kind of a Lou Williams type in the NBA. Like, he's definitely a sixth man. Like, he's won sixth man countless times. Like, he can come in and he can give you some instant offense. He can also make you want to pull your hair out. But when you're in a tight game and you need offense, he's the dude that you go to. And, you know, I think he's one of the go-to guys on the team. I'm going to go with him for sixth man.
Okay. Shooto award. I went with JD Notae. I'm going to keep JD, but I like what you said about the shooter doesn't have to just be a guy that jacks it up from three. JD does that a lot of the time, but you noticed in Missouri, I got on to JD earlier in this podcast about when he is the point guard, the offense tends to stall a little bit. And it does, but it's also when he is the point guard and the ball is in his hands, he can make plays that a lot of guys just don't.
Absolutely. Yeah. So
when he's driving to the hoop, he's a pretty good finisher for how small he is around the rim. So he can be the guy that is going to take shots, whether you like it or not. He's going to take a majority of shots when he's on the court. Maybe not a majority, statistically speaking, but it's going
to
seem
somewhere around 28 to 30%.
It's going to seem like a lot, but when he's on the court, he's going to put the ball towards the hoop, and most of the time it goes in. So I feel confident with JD being my shooter.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Moses. He's, I think he's Arkansas. He's Arkansas's best option from three. I don't want to say it's not close, but Moses is at the moment, he's a better three-point shooter than even Desi right now.
Yeah, especially Desi after that rough game against Missouri. So go-to, I have Moses Moody. I'm going to keep that. If Justin Smith was still in here, I might put him too. If you needed a bucket down low, you might give it to Justin Smith and see if he can't get a bucket down low when the game's on the line. But Moses is going to be your guy that I wouldn't necessarily – have the ball in Moses' hands with the game down 20, but I'm running a play for Moses. And I think that's the definition of the go-to, is who you're running the play to get the guy open. Last year, you think about in terms of last year, you may have put the, you're going to put the ball in Mason Jones' hands regardless of what happens. And then you might run a play to see if Isaiah Joe gets open, but Mason Jones was the end all be all. He was the alpha, the omega in last year's offense.
Yeah, no kidding.
And this year, I think that you might put the ball at the end of the game in the hands of a guy like a Jalen Tate to facilitate.
Sure.
Or, you know, like I said earlier, you might put it in the hands of JD Notte and let him go to work, but he just doesn't seem like the guy at the current moment to get the ball into playmakers' hands.
So I would love to see kind of Moses, a little bit more of Moses in that Mason Jones role.
Okay.
Where, you know, I know he's really good 3-point shooter, like, but I feel like he's got a really good basketball IQ. Like I feel like he can read pick and rolls well. Like him and Vanover could effectively run some nice ball screens, and he could, you know, maybe get to that mid range area and knock down some shots, or, you know, he's one of the best freshmen in the league. So people are going to have to respect him and pay attention to him. That's going to draw defenders. And he's super selfless, like very mature guy. He's not a black hole by any means, you know, like Mike Anderson used to say about Daniel Gafford. But he's willing to find teammates, and I would like to see that. I don't know that Arkansas gets to a point where they have to do that, but that would be a pretty interesting deal for me just to see how that would play out.
I like that. I haven't given that much thought. But if you ran Moses in the Mason Jones role, basically with the pick and pop or the pick and roll game with Connor Vanover, so you're going to have to put somebody on Moses. It's almost like matchups, and you have Moses that can get the ball to other guys. So who are you going to put if you are the opposing team? You're going to put your best guard on Moses, and you're going to put your big man on Connor Vanover. Well, if you put your big man on Connor Vanover, hopefully he can step out and hit a three over a slow-moving big. And you put your best guy on Moses, well, then that, who are you going to put on Desi? Who are you going to put on JD if you have both of them in the game at the same time? Who are you going to – if you have Jalen Tate in there? Tate's decently good at being creative and finding guys, and he's good at that point guard spot. You just hope maybe he can hit a few more shots down the street. But I do like that. I haven't thought much about putting Moses in the pick and pop and the pick and roll game like – Musselman did with Moses, or with, pardon me, with Mason Jones last year. Almost had a brain fart there. That's interesting.
I don't know that that necessarily happens. I don't know if they want to put that much on Moses, but maybe you do it for, maybe you try it for a couple of minutes here and there just to see if there's anything there. You know what I mean? Just kind of maybe a little bit of a trial run. But I think if Arkansas like absolutely needs bucket late, like the ball's going to be in JD's hands, I think, and there's going to be some action run for Moses, and so I think that's probably your best bet right now for late game offense. And Jalen Tate could obviously be an option to have the ball in his hands, and then that way you could have Desi, Moses, and JD all just constantly moving perhaps, and then I mean, that's an option too. I just don't know that they're going to go to Moses like they did with Mason, like full time. That's a lot to ask of a freshman,
for sure. Just
even though he's playing really well.
I agree. Just to try it out though. I don't know that even Arkansas has done that a whole lot this year, just having Moses in that point guard position. It'll be interesting to see. All right. Then moving on, Mr. Reliable, I have Desi Sills. I'm not changing that worth a darn. You've got Justin Smith. Which he could have been very easily Mr. Reliable if he had been healthy. Are you going to change it up at all?
Is Moses the Mr. Reliable too? Like, is he just like almost sweeping my awards?
If you put him at Mr. Reliable, Moses would be your MVP, your shooter, one of two go-tos, and then he would be Mr. Reliable. So 4 out of 6. Is that what you want to do?
But he's been that good, right? Like, could you blame me?
No.
Saying he's been Mr. Reliable. Like, he's the – like I said earlier, he's the only guy that's scoring double figures every game. Really good rebounder, solid defender. I don't know that I I don't know. It would be either him or Desi at this point, I think. But if we're breaking this down to a second half player, I would go with JD. JD's been really good in the second half of almost like half of Arkansas's games.
I'm running out of room on my notepad. So are you going Moses, Desi, JD?
I go with Moses again.
Okay.
Been at least pretty good in every game.
Yeah, I think that you're exactly right. All right, Scotty. That's going to just about wrap us up here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. Before we go, I want to just kind of dive into the schedule. Arkansas's front end of the schedule is pretty hard. As you said, they started on the road at Auburn, got the win there, then playing ranked Missouri and ranked Tennessee back-to-back. They'll get a slight reprieve with Georgia, although Georgia is not an easy team. They get to play them at home, though, on Saturday. And then going to Baton Rouge to play LSU, that's never fun. And you got to play at Alabama.
That's not a fun two-game road stretch.
No.
At all.
Auburn comes back home, and then you, if you want to talk about a three games that you might have a reprieve, you beat Auburn on the road. So you got Auburn at Vanderbilt, then Ole Miss at home. Then the SEC Big 12 Challenge, Oklahoma State, which Oklahoma State blew a lead to West Virginia last night.
Oh, did they ever? Goodness gracious.
Then Mississippi State, which Arkansas always has trouble with them, and Texas A&M, which is always a good game. Both of those games are at home. And then you've got the game to circle, February 9th again at Kentucky. That's about as far as we'll look, but this is a tough stretch to start out the year. But you really, looking at this week, you really need to go 1-2 again like you did last week. You know, Musselman talked about after the Auburn game, they kind of felt like it was almost a must win with Missouri and Tennessee coming up. You might be proven right because Tennessee coming off a loss to Alabama is not going to be an easy game. And then Arkansas will have Georgia at home on Saturday to wrap up the week. So I think that you need to go 1-2 at least again this week.
What do you think Arkansas needs to do before that that Oklahoma State game to feel good about, you know, maybe the back half of the conference schedule?
Okay, so they're 1-1 right now. That is 7 games. You need to beat Georgia, probably lose to LSU. You can probably lose to Alabama. That puts you at 1-2. 2-2 if you beat Auburn, Vanderbilt, and puts you at 3-2. You really, to feel good, you probably need to be 4-2.
Yeah, I would think so too.
And saying those games that,
I mean, we could go down at Tennessee.
Probably a loss.
Georgia at home, you should beat them.
Right.
Go to LSU. That's going to be really tough. I mean, like real tough.
So I said 4-2. I've probably meant 4-3. I didn't count that LSU or that Tennessee game in there.
At Alabama, I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like Arkansas had a pretty good plan when they went to Alabama last year, but Jimmy Witt saved them in that game. Just he got to the rim constantly. That's going to be. I think that one's, even though Alabama's been pretty impressive at this point, I think it's a toss up.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn at home, you should beat them. At Vanderbilt,
you got it.
Vanderbilt done at this point.
They're 0-1 in conference.
They've lost to Richmond, which is – that's fine. Lost to Davidson. I don't know. I feel like you should win at Vanderbilt.
That's one of those road games. You know, you talk about stealing road games. That's not one that you necessarily need to steal. That's one that you just – you need that road win. You just kind of need it.
Yeah, I think you got to have that one.
Because then you play
– what's? Yeah. Ole Miss. Ole Miss is 5-3, lost to Dayton, Alabama, Wichita State. Like, they've beaten the teams they should and lost to the better teams that they've played. I don't know. I may just have to keep an eye on Ole Miss, but, you know, I feel like that's a game at home that you should win. You know what I mean? Like, it's a midweek game, but you should beat Ole Miss.
This is going to sound really bad, Scotty, especially as we talk through it and you're like, well, maybe you should win these games or whatever. But if looking at the schedule even farther now, this first – three games, tough. At Auburn, Missouri at home that's ranked, at Tennessee. That's tough. But your next games, you know, we talked about that you need to go 4-3 really in this stretch. Almost 5-2 if you could sneak one of those away games. Like you're talking about maybe at Alabama. Because you think about, all right, after Oklahoma State, you played Mississippi State and Texas A&M at home. Most of the time you play Texas A&M well at home, not on the road. So maybe right. You can get two wins there. But once you hit February 9th in that game at Kentucky, you go at Kentucky, at Missouri, Florida at home, at Texas A&M, Alabama, and LSU before you wrap up the season with South Carolina. That's a six-game stretch that is going to be tough.
That's
so you need to get as many wins as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Through this next stretch, you know, obviously you can chalk up the Tennessee game to what it is. It's a tough game on the road, and if you win it, then it's a huge momentum boost and a huge plus for the season. But then if you lose it, you know, that's not necessarily the worst thing ever. But these next few games before the Big 12 SEC Challenge, and then the two games after the Big 12 SEC Challenge will be huge for Razorback season going forward, to where they're not in a pressure bind, where it's like, all right, we got to win games at Kentucky, at Missouri, got to steal a home win against Florida somehow. And then the pressure to beat Alabama and LSU when they come to your court, which you did last year. You beat LSU when they came to your home floor. It's just you don't want to have that added pressure.
Yeah. I think Mus has talked a little bit about just the first three games of this season, you know, being as tough as any three. But I think no matter what happens against Tennessee, Arkansas's got to play well against Georgia on Saturday. Because if you lose at Tennessee and then maybe you fiddle fart around and you kind of beat Georgia, you know, not very convincingly, or don't show well, but you still win. I mean, just because you win a game doesn't mean you've got doesn't give you like a ton of confidence. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then your next two games are at LSU, really good, at Alabama, who just won at Tennessee. Like the next three games after Tennessee, I think, I don't know if I want to say they define the season, but they tell us a lot about this group.
If you were looking at the Razorbacks right now, Scotty, after 1 week and they're 1-1, and then you look at the next 2 weeks and the next four games, if Arkansas comes out of the first six games 3-3, how are you feeling?
Pretty good. So I think that means you would have taken another road game, and those are always important. Like if you want to get in the tournament, you got to start building your resume, and you need to have at least a couple of quality road wins in there. And I don't know what Auburn's going to look like at the end of the year, but I don't know that. I mean, it's great that you won at Auburn, but this isn't like a great Auburn team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they almost gave up 100 points in a conference game. You know what I mean? So
I think they're, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, you're good. Go ahead.
I think that, like I said, if you come away 3-3, you're exactly right. You stole another game on the road from somebody, either from Tennessee, from LSU, or from Alabama. So I think that's something to hang your hat on as you move forward. And then into the next week against Auburn and at Vanderbilt, where you'd like to go 2-0 and really 3-0 before the SEC Big 12 Challenge. All right, Scotty, a lot of information. Man, it's good to be back in here talking basketball with you. SEC season heating up for sure, and it'll just continue to move forward, and we'll be here with you all throughout the season. Arkansas going to Tennessee. They play at 6:00 ESPN2 at Tennessee, a place where they haven't had a whole lot of success either. So it'll be an interesting game. See if Arkansas can bounce back. We'll see if Tennessee can bounce back as well, as coming off the loss to Alabama. All right, well, for Scotty Bordelon, I am Seth Campbell saying thank you for joining us here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. We will talk to you next week.